options activity has altered the investment landscape. Get an edge on this massive flow of funds with Tier 1 Alpha's Market Situation Report, brought to you by HedgEye, a daily newsletter of the latest moves in the options market and a weekly webcast featuring myself, Mike Green of Simplify Asset Management, and Tier 1 Alpha's Craig Peterson and David Pegler. Go to HedgEye.com/research for more information.
Thanks for listening to the HedgEye Investing Summit, featuring conversations with some of the sharpest minds in investing. To get access to the other 8 HedgEye Investing Summit conversations and for more great investing content, go to HedgEye.com.
Hi, welcome back, and it's day 2 of the HedgEye Investing Summit. I was just offline, Danielle was trying to get me going, okay? So she can get me going on a lot of topics. We're going to attempt to avoid certain topics, but I don't think that that's entirely off the table.
We'll be woke and PC and nice to Janet Yellen.
Oh, jeez.
Woo!
Okay, let's start with right up the middle on the latest bull market narrative, which is dovish Fed speak by stocks. What do you think about that?
Well, last week, if I recall, wasn't it just a week ago? Last week, it was rising bond yields because the economy is so strong.
Yeah.
Because that was that narrative, right?
Yeah.
So now it's falling bond yields because the Fed's going to back off, and we're back to saying engineer a soft landing. Okay.
But so
they,
make this up as
they go on. Look, I woke up this morning, and I won't mention where I saw it except for Bloomberg, and they were like, bond yield's flat. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting, flat. I look, and you know, the 10-year's down 10 basis points. And I'm like, does there have to be a narrative in media? Can you just say bonds continue to rally for no reason that we can come up with and move on? And by the way, oil's down too, and move on? I mean, it's like, the law of supply and demand has been eradicated. Yeah. We can't talk about that anymore because we have these narratives, and all of the narratives end with the consumer being strong, which is hooey, which is a really nice word. I think it's still AM here on the East Coast. But it's hooey. The consumer is not strong. And the consumer has one by one lost pillars of cash support from Uncle Sam. So now we're down to infrastructure, which is real, and ESG and DEI spending, which is real. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's real in the sense of it's really money that's pumping through the economy. 50% of nominal GDP in the second quarter was government spending. I'm not saying it's a figment of our collective imagination. It's producing economic output. It's producing unproductive economic output, but it's nonetheless showing up in the numbers. Mm-hmm. I don't deny it. But how on earth, I ask you this question, Keith. It's, imagine a world in which ISM new orders is down for 5 quarters, not months, quarters in a row. Negative for 5 consecutive quarters, Keith. Are we in recession? In that imaginary world?
I don't know.
Because we always have been. But we're not right now.
Right.
We're not. We're not because the fiscal offset is so massive, but it's no longer going directly to consumers. Mm-hmm. And that's the key. When Danny Werfel, who I've had to make room, right? Paul Volcker, Von Mises, and I had to make room for an IRS commissioner. I've never had to put an IRS commissioner poster on my ceiling, and yet there's Danny. So when Danny, who grew several pair, Commish Werfel at the IRS, pulled the plug with the House Ways and Means, whoo-whoo, on the employee retention credit, in July, if you were to line up a stock mm-hmm. of LVMH against that, when did LVMH stock peak?
Right there.
In July, yeah. When the employee retention credit pumped $29.8 billion in cash into the economy, into the hands of wealthy Americans, most of whom were frauding the government, defrauding the government, and taking everybody and their dog to go shopping at on the Champs-Élysées and buying LVMH bags or cognac or whatever it is, because LVMH came out yesterday and they were like, where's the money? And it's not a Chinese phenomenon.
Yeah.
And it's because the U.S. government, food stamps went first, and then it was shrinking of Medicaid. This was part of the public emergency being called off. That was earlier this year. What happened? Oh, I don't know. Mothers of school-age kids, their labor force participation rate hit a record high the minute those two pillars of support finally fell. So people who had dropped out of the workforce the day the CARES Act was signed finally came back into the workforce. Mm-hmm. Why? Because they weren't getting cash anymore. They weren't getting an extra $250 a month for a four-person family in the form of supplementary emergency pandemic food stamps. So they came back into the workforce. 55 to 64-year-olds, remember everybody, I'm retiring early. Mm-hmm. 55 to 64-year-olds, their labor force participation rate's at a record high.
Mm-hmm. They don't have any money.
But there's no more. They got this 9.8% cost of living adjustment boost in Social Security in January, which rocked. It did for a few months. Mm-hmm. And then they came rushing back into the workforce because that was the last cash that the government gave them. And then the last cash we gave was in July mm-hmm. to wealthy Americans through the ERC. Mm-hmm. And now what?
It's amazing like how you have all these, they're not, you know, they're not breadcrumbs. These are huge items in the GDP calculus. So when you look at, I think, guys, actually, if you can find it, I know we can't show a slide of LVMH, but if you look at luxury spending year over year, which includes pleasure boats, jewelry, et cetera, everything, I think that's in slides, exhibits 40 through 75 probably in our macro deck, where we show that the rates of change of all these things have turned clearly.
Yep.
But from like bubble peaks, there's the chart right there.
I mean, look,
these are like 20, 30% growth rates.
Oh, yeah. And this was, there was a Wall Street Journal article that was like, student loan repayments are going to resume. There could be a $100 billion hit to consumption. And I'm like, you've pumped $300 billion in employee retention credit in the last year. Who gives a shit about, $100 billion, it's being taken away. It's not that I'm trying to belittle what Americans who have student loans are going to be repaying. It's that people don't contextualize that this one program pumped three times that into the economy in 12 months. And people are like, I don't understand why international travel is so damn strong. I'm like... Well, I'm like, well, I can tell you.
Well, okay.
See, I'm wearing my burnt orange. I'm commiserating with my Longhorns. I was in the stadium, so I'm wearing it just to say we're still going to come back. We still beat Alabama. First top three team on the road we beat since 1969. It was just a little something against a rivalry last Saturday, but anyways. That's in case you're wondering why I put on like a Texas twang every once in a while, because I'm wearing my burnt orange.
And that's where you live. So it's cool.
Sometimes, yeah.
You know, like people in Texas aren't like people on CNBC, like the consumer's in great shape. It's no.
No, but they all took the ERC.
Yeah. Okay. Employee retention credit.
It's still being advertised by this man in this little puffy chef's hat thing, who's on Shark Tank, who I guess is a fellow Canadian.
The guy before, for those of you that don't know, you might hear on Sirius Satellite, actually on CNBC commercials. That's where you pump everything. IPOs, bullshit, SPAC Jesus. But it was, hi, I'm Howard Mackler. If you have, if you got PPP and you want more, just call me. And it was like, that alongside any geriatric drug is the only CNBC advertising that was left. But it was like every day.
Innovation taxes went the next step, right? Modern Family's Ty Burrell as their next spokesman. They racked it up a notch. They're paying small banks. They're paying, that's the thing that these companies were doing. They weren't just collecting 30% commissions on a tax refund that's legally 100% to the taxpayer.
Yep.
They weren't just collecting that like an ambulance chaser. They were giving a portion of that to people who would go out like middle marketing.
And
like
securitizing.
Going and selling face cream. And they were securitizing like factoring. I mean, this was insane. A little cottage industry grew up around this overnight, and then Danny Werfel, the IRS commission. I've never like hero loved a bureaucrat. After I left the Fed, I was like, I hate bureaucrats. And I'm like going, the commish, he rocks. And hopefully, because I know that my work has gone all the way up to the Ways and Means Committee, hopefully they decide that on January the 1st, they don't resume this. But Kevin O'Leary's banking on it because they're still running tons of ad revenues.
So you have Mackler had his company, and O'Leary has one of these?
Innovation Refunds was the big player. The other big player, the Wall Street Journal, did a huge profile on, at which point they took down not one, not two, but three of their training videos that were explaining to somebody who does lawn care and somebody who does manicures, how they can make a few thousand dollars if you can just talk anybody you know into filing one of these things. Because it's free money.
You're kidding me.
No, but they had training videos that were like in violation of IRS code that were out there. And the Wall Street Journal, who I spoke to, but the Wall Street Journal did this big investigative thing and they had to take down three training videos right away. That's who Kevin O'Leary is working with.
That guy, he can't find his way. First of all, he's like an embarrassment to my homeland. I mean, Kevin O'Leary, shame on you. The guy, if there is a way to find your way into a rat hole, he's in it. Like,
does this rip people off? Sign me up. I've never met the man. I haven't. But there's, at the beginning of September, I'm going to dig in the weeds here for a minute, because when the IRS said we're pulling the ERC, they also said if you have already filed a claim that you feel may not qualify, we're not going to pursue criminal proceedings against you if you pull the claim. And so the amount of employee retention credit that should have been paid in September fell by the end of the month because people pulled their claims knowing that they had defrauded the government and scared out of their heads. The statute of limitations for this is going for audits is going from 3 to 10 years.
Wow.
And it's criminal.
Well, I mean, O'Leary was, you know, Bankman-Fried's buddy. I mean, he's got no problem with this. But the people that wouldn't know otherwise.
A lot of the smaller business people who are like, no, it's okay. You can say that your cousin and your husband are your employees. You get $26,000. Get as many employees as you can. You'll get $26,000 per employee that you can make up out of thin air. Mm-hmm. And so they got these, you know, call it $200,000. If they can't cough up $200,000 in cash and penalties and interest, they're going to jail. That's tragic. That's where you say to yourself,
just wrong.
How do these people, how do they market this thing and get away with it?
Well, I mean, this is if you go, I don't know if you've read the book End Times by Peter Turchin, where he's like, there's the state, there's the elites, and then there's the rest of us.
Yes.
Right? And you and I are always for the rest of us. You're probably the most representative person of the people because you worked in the state, whatever you want to characterize the state. But
the money
printing
sausage factory.
No, it's terrible.
Don't go there.
But the elites, as Turchin defines, and I agree with this 100%, is getting yourself in a place of power and capitalizing, you know, whether it be plutocratic or not, but capitalizing on your power in terms of influencing not only your own wealth, but people who wouldn't know otherwise. Right. I mean, on this one, Kevin O'Leary is way better than 2 for 2 on this, but he's crypto and ERC just to get these people who wouldn't know otherwise.
I'm not defending the innovation taxes guy, but
and then he wears two watches like a rich man watches and a tuxedo. But it's like this guy, like in Canadian hockey, I'd take the jersey over his head and speed bag him. This is ridiculous.
And yet he's still advertising.
Of course he is. That's how he gets paid.
The innovation taxes guy pulled all the advertisements. He got rid of most of his staff in Des Moines. And then, of course, they had a second office in Miami because where else? So, but they closed all their advertising down. They at least said game over. But the company that O'Leary works for, they're still advertising. They're flaunting their lobbying of the U.S. government. And look, Danny, A, I love you. B, if you're listening right now, don't let this thing get extended in January, please. And there's precedent that if an IRS program is known to be being defrauded, that it can go away. So right now it's on hold, and they're investigating. But I just hope it goes completely away on January the 1st.
Okay, so let's take this back to where, because I will
anyway,
go.
Sorry, you but don't the consumer is not strong.
Yeah, no, yeah, let's take it back to where was GDP, where is the pending recession. But first, let's take rates first. So rates started the discussion with, no, I disagree with that narrative, right? You're the first person to say you have no idea how Powell has grown a pair, I think were the words that you've used, how that we're going to be way tighter for way longer. Mm-hmm. If you're old Wall looking for rate cuts, she was always the first person to say, okay, if you think that, go ahead and lose money being long duration. I mean, and people completely blew up. 60-40 portfolios blew up. Some of the biggest bond fund managers in the world tried buying duration 2 jobs reports ago and blew up. You know, it's on and on and on. But do you still stand like here today and say, look, he's not giving you your old Wall cowbell?
So here's the difference between then and now. So I in May of 2022 here in Stamford, Connecticut, did not know about the ERC. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that the Biden administration was going to start spending wartime levels after the pandemic ended. Mm-hmm. But yet we've ramped right back up there. So we're pumping a lot of money in with the CHIPS Act and all that. I did not know that. So I did not know that there was going to be a at-the-margin source of inflation, mm-hmm. fresh inflation, because that's what that's why LVMH stock peaked in July with the ERC, because mm-hmm. people were spending tons of money on luxury goods. But I didn't foresee that. So, and I won't say shame on me, because that's, how do you foresee the vagaries of criminals and politicians? But I didn't foresee that.
I didn't either, so we're together.
But the difference between now and then, though, is there's a group of people who think that there's going to be sticky inflation in a falling wage environment, which is what we're in right now. Mm-hmm. If you look at the Atlanta wage tracker 12 months ago, if you were a job switcher, mm-hmm. you were getting a lot to change jobs. That gap is completely closed, completely closed. So you get no benefit from hop and ship. The grass is not greener, period end.
So if you're working at Wendy's and you go to McDonald's, you get paid more. And you hop, boom, you get this premium.
Right, that's gone. Yep. Walmart has come out and said, we're lowering starting salaries. Amazon, the country's largest $19.8 billion in 2022, corporate lobbyist, came out with a very sweet message and said, we're going to be hiring 250,000 holiday seasonal workers because it's going to be a great Christmas. At which point, just a few days ago, FedEx and UPS said, our delivery volumes are so down year over year that we're lowering prices for the holidays. So who's right, Walmart or Amazon, the biggest corporate lobbyists? I'm going with Walmart here. Mm-hmm. But wage inflation, the wage price spiral, it's a figment of people's imagination who've got money riding on that narrative being followed through.
Yep.
Powell doesn't care. He's going to stand behind JOLTS. He's going to stand behind whatever you want to call that non-farm payroll report was. He's going to stand behind gasoline prices if he has to. He's going to use whatever specious, and he knows it's bad data. He's not an economist. He knows it's bad data. He knows that he was led into a dark field and whipped with transitory by his staff, does not trust his staff. And he knows that the data are wrong. He doesn't care. Mm-hmm. He's going to cite it as long as he can. Mm. He's going to use that specious data to say the consumer is strong. The labor market's too hot. Now, it looks like the financial conditions have tightened enough for us. So he obviously allowed everybody and their dog out of the gate on Monday morning, like, what, a day and a half ago. So everybody's now saying that the 10-year's risen enough such that we don't have to do another rate hike. But he's going to stand behind false data knowingly to keep rates higher for longer. So every banker, commercial real estate person who thinks they're a genius, everybody who thinks that just because there's a second pause mm-hmm. means the rate hiking cycle is over, they may be right. Mm-hmm. But dust me off when there's a rate cut.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, he's not going to stop shrinking the balance sheet.
So let's do a dust
me off.
So
higher for longer is not, again, if there's nothing on November the 1st, it's still not the happy days that they think it is. Mm-hmm.
So the dusting me off part, which is, I mean, I get it and you get it all the time from institutions. It's a way, it's a dogma, it's a bias that's built into 20 years of investing. So what I'll say is, I'll say, look, if the economic outcome, we just delayed the recession. To your point, all these government spending items surprised me to the upside, but now those are the base effects and you have to comp them, and now we have a war between Republicans and Democrats on where that deficit is. So it's like,
I'm going to stop you for a second. What does that mean? A war between going into an election year?
I don't know. I mean,
on a pragmatic level, that means your next cash to U.S. households is March of 2025.
Well, there you go.
On a practical level.
Yeah, so it's delayed. Exactly. So we have...
No, the recession was delayed, but now the stimulus is delayed.
Yeah, exactly. Against those base effects.
Right.
So how I model it, like you guys can show, I think it's slide 19, we have this GDP is highly augmented by everything you've said on government handouts. And if I'm right, we've entered the recession now, and you're going to see that by Q1, Q2 of next year. So if that's correct, people would say, institutional client will say, okay, then shit's going to hit the fan, then the Fed's going to cut. And I say, okay, if the stock market crashes as that's happening, which it tends to do once people realize that a recession is a thing, then the VIX will be at 30 and the Fed will cut. I said, okay, there's no body of evidence to say that the Federal Reserve in my lifetime wouldn't cut if all that happens. So I, you know.
Keith, what made Powell pivot?
One word. It almost came out of my mouth, but we would get fired if I said it.
Issuance.
I got another answer, but it's going to be part of that too.
Issuance. It was issuance. There were no high yield bonds sold for 41 record days. Issuance is the key. I don't care if high yield bond issuance or CLO volumes have fallen to a trickle. There has not been, the longest we went, and Jeffrey Gundlach lost his mind, rightly so. We got to like 24 days recently of no high yield bond, 24 days solid of not a single junk bond being issued. That's going to get Powell's attention because when the wheels of the financial markets completely seize up and your refinancing capacity goes away, stops for 41 days, that's what the credit markets are what matter. He would love a 20% decline in the S&P as long as issuance continued in some way, shape, or form. Somebody's getting some deal done somewhere.
Well, high yield doesn't. Now, that's got a long history entering a recession. It trades just the way it's trading right now. High yield goes from 200 over to 400 over. Everyone's like, everything's fine. Then it goes from 400 over to 600 over. And we literally, in the last 3 weeks, entered that phase, according to, like, our model. So that, I think you've talked about,
And that could happen next year.
Could be happening now, in October. This is not,
they're still selling bonds.
That doesn't arrest a widening.
No, it doesn't. And look, I've known Oleg Milentov. He is the head of high yield at Bank of America. I've known him for 15, 20 years now. I mean, we go way, way, way back. And every single time you have a wall of maturity, high yield issuers are going to be like, okay, there's 2024 and 2025. Right. They're the real deal. What they do in a zero interest rate environment is pre-refinance. Mm-hmm. They get it out of the way 12, 18 months in advance. That ain't happening because they can't. They can't. If they could preemptively refinance this paper, they would. But the paper's like 3% and they'd be like charged. They'd be selling it at like 12. It's too far away. Same exact dynamic as what we've seen in 2023 in commercial real estate, which is why trash and trophies are trading and nothing in between. The nothing in between trading hands is because where that building is financed and where it would be refinanced, it's so far apart. People are just like, we'll just wait for Powell to take interest rates back down to zero. Talk to me in a few months.
So that part,
but that's coming to a theater near you for corporate
bonds.
But
he's not, you're saying he's not going to cut interest rates.
If there's no seizing up in credit issuance, which can be systemic, he's just going to keep rates at a high level.
Yeah.
And keeping rates at a high level is painful.
Well, that, on my signal, I was going through this with Bianco yesterday. He was writing about 4.5%, as his baseline. And then, lo and behold, the low end of my risk range on bond yields is 4.5%. I just went there again, or we're going there.
Yeah.
And then you bounce. But Wall Street's not built for that table. You know, they're not. Mm-mm. They want the table below that level by hundreds of basis points.
And that's what they're used to. And they don't just need the zero bound. They need the zero bound and leverage.
Yes, and leverage, exactly. So how does it, have you heard or have you talked to him or any of his minions about, there's the rest of us again, right? That's what the elites want. That's if you run a big time levered real estate business. If you run BREIT, you definitely want that. Hey, guys. but
going for a 12th month.
But what if you're the rest
redemptions.
Of us?
They're going for a solid 12, and they're going to go for a baker's dozen. What now? BREIT redemptions.
Well, the rest of us. Let's say my parents, who are in their 70s, retired. Me, my kids. We like this thing called the savings rate, a risk-free rate at 5%. It's really good. My kids are learning it on Apple
we
Pay.
We put all four of our kids like in some 5.3% whatever, and now we're all, as a happy family, learning about compound interest.
Yes. So that's my question. I mean, does Powell know that this is a thing for most of us?
Robert McGrory here, Director of Subscriber Development at HedgeEye. Hope you're enjoying our podcast. Start generating alpha with our suite of Sector Pro investing research products. Dive deep into retail, industrials, technology, and everything in between with exclusive access to the sharpest analysts and actionable ideas on Wall Street. Go to HedgeEye.com/research to subscribe. Enjoy the rest of this episode.
Oh, he knows that this is beneficial, which is why he is on board with the Logan plan that dictates that even if they start lowering interest rates, they're going to keep running that balance sheet down.
Mm-hmm.
Which...
But lowering interest rates, I mean, that's not...
But they're not going to do it, like, big time.
Well, you're saying no cuts. I mean...
I'm saying no cuts. If nothing in the issuance market goes wrong, we could be next fall before we see the first rate cut.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what he's got envisioned.
Mm-hmm.
Because the New York Fed put a game plan out that shows where it wants the balance sheet to be at the end of 2025.
Right.
So that means higher for longer, while he continues to reduce the size of the balance sheet, and that hurts Wall Street.
Mm-hmm.
That hurts the elites.
Mm-hmm.
The roll-off of the debt, just like I was talking to Lacey in this room just a few days ago, that hurts them. Because private equity can only go for so long without interest rates going back to zero.
Mm-hmm.
And if they keep reducing the size of the balance sheet, if liquidity continues to be constrained, private equity has literally no way out, no exit.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a problem. I mean,
it's a big problem because the non-bank financial system's bigger than the conventional banking system.
But for forever, my entire career, a quarter of a century, the trade has been, if shit hits the fan, I cut rates, and oh wait, oil goes to 147, you the people, there you go. You don't even have a savings account that matters, Bernanke would say. He wouldn't even talk about it. But you know, you're not going to suffer at the pump. You're not going to. But even you can even almost go through that. This was pre-war. Oil went up 40% the mm-hmm. minute that the markets started saying, "Oh, that's the pause."
Mm-hmm.
So how do you think about that? Like, where if you get what Wall Street's been begging for since you've been telling them they're not going to get what they want, you know, if they actually got it, the first thing I would do is buy the crap out of oil futures. You get a reacceleration of inflation right off of easier comparisons.
True. True, but...
Cowbell equates to higher asset prices.
It definitely does, but we have to caveat that with last time cowbell was equal parts monetary fiscal.
Yes, okay.
So it's not every day that you see 43.2% of GDP pop out of the fiscal government. Because the New Deal, as I always like to say, was spread out over years and was 40.1%.
Yes.
But we pumped 40, and then the Fed monetized it all. $10 trillion, give or take. But it took the two of them together. In other words, the Fed cannot go at this alone. Nobody on Wall Street wants to hear this message. Nobody wants to hear that even if you go to zero interest rates, and even if you go to QE, if you don't have an equal part, and by the way, not just CHIPS Act type stuff, cash.
Yeah.
Cash, 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 directly deposited, which by the way puts us back in Weimar, because that's what created the inflation. You bypassed the banking system, you gave people the money directly, they spent it directly.
Mm-hmm.
That caused inflation. Otherwise, people were like, I don't know why QE didn't work before, and I'm like, because it had to go through the banking system and it got stuck. But after the pandemic, they just gave people money
mm-hmm.
and we got real inflation.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's why, you know, I joke, but not really, that if there's a blue wave on election day, given they've confirmed to the Federal Reserve Board two individuals who their combined body of academic work advocates for universal basic income, modern monetary theory, the Fed being able to address climate change, central bank digital currency and reparations. Two people. So if we get a blue wave and somehow, some way they manage to have special ops take out Powell, I'm going to Italy because at least they embrace their socialism. I mean, people are like, that's a socialist country too. And I'm like, yeah, and they've learned to live with it and they're happier. But socialism by stealth, by having the Federal Reserve LBO'd by Treasury so that it can do its bidding. That's what happened. Mm-hmm. This will stick in your mind. Right after the pandemic, what role did the Fed play vis-a-vis the Treasury pumping out all of this debt? The Federal Reserve was the Treasury's bitch, period. And that's what the progressives dream about every night, yep. is that the Federal Reserve not actually exists to make policy, because all they want is for interest rates to be zero. Now, a monkey could keep interest rates at zero. You don't need 800 PhDs to do that. You just press the button and you push hold at zero. Mm-hmm. And then the New York Markets Desk, they simply facilitate the monetization. That's a function. And in a world of AI, that you probably don't need it. That's it. You could just have, it could be like that 2001 movie way back. You could just have like some computer being the Fed. Because
digital monkey.
Zero interest rate policy is not monetary policy.
Yeah.
It's not. It's just a state of existence in third world countryness, where that's the only, well, we can't actually handle normalized interest rates. You know, but that's what the progressives want. And if there's a blue wave, and all the people who are, they're boycotting their student loan payments, and there's YouTube videos out there about how to take out an American Express Platinum card as a non-entity, run it up, and get rid of it without being prosecuted or having mm-hmm. anybody. There are videos out there. There's a generation out there who's like, let's figure out how to screw the elite mm-hmm. and take as much money as we can for nothing. If all of them vote, and they outnumber you and me, babe, if all of them vote on election day and we get a blue wave and special ops takes out Powell, we don't need a Fed. Mm-hmm. Or the progressives will do the Treasury's bidding. Then Wall Street will really get what it wants. Because is that what it really wants? And that's what I think people need to ask themselves. Do you really want a world in which we can only exist at the zero bound with QE going mm-hmm. all the time? Because if that's really, really what you want, and you have to have the fiscal authorities with you 100% of the way, and you've got inflation running at Venezuelan levels, granted, most people in private equity already own their own private islands, but I would guess that most of Wall Street would be miserable under such circumstances. Mm-hmm. But that's what they're asking for.
It's crazy. What you just said is just totally crazy. I mean,
Keith, play devil's advocate.
No.
What is a Fed, in effect, that can only have zero interest rates and monetize every penny of U.S. debt? What kind of an organization is that? Do you need anybody to run it?
Hi, Robert McGrory here, Director of Subscriber Development at Hedgeye. Join our entire research analyst team live before the market opens for deep dive investing analysis, our favorite stock ideas, and our risk manager-in-chief, Keith McCullough's macro overlay. Our team of 40-plus equity analysts discuss key market developments, trends, and our high-conviction long and short investing ideas. You will not get this granular level of insight anywhere else. A video replay, audio version, and analyst summary notes from the call are available shortly after each live show to ensure you don't miss anything. Go to hedgeye.com/research to subscribe and tune in live to the call weekdays at 7:45 a.m. Eastern. Enjoy the rest of this episode.
This is why, for the first time in a real conversation, Hedgeye Investing Summit, I just wiped the makeup off my face, like, and it's all over my hands. Like, it's
I'm
like
not
I,
doing that.
I shouldn't be wearing makeup, especially around you, but I get it. I mean, it's like, but that's Wall Street. Like, never has Wall Street had a moral code. Wall Street is always going to do what gets them paid the next bonus. They're not going to answer. They're not going to walk down that line. They're not going to walk up that hill. Like, your kids go to a military academy and will fight for their, I assume, will fight for that flag and for freedom and for, you know, free market
capitalism.
Any
kid of mine who didn't stand for the flag would have broken knees.
Yeah, exactly. But Wall Street? I mean, Wall Street will not answer your question because, one, that's not part of the code. Like, do you think that Jonathan Gray, who's Steve's latest BFF, and he gets rid of, you know, whoever it is at the end of every cycle, by the way. I know they're saying that Jonathan's going to be the new CEO when Steve walks to one of his
islands.
His
name was Tony James, and he sold DLJ at the top, and he got out at the top of private equity, and he's no schlub.
But anyways, they're not like these people. They're not going to answer. They're not going to answer the way that.
No, because they want the pomp and circumstance. They want the FOMC press conferences.
Exactly.
They want Lael Brainard to stand up there and explain why we have to have zero interest rate policy, the same way Bernanke explained why we needed QE2 when we didn't, the same way Bernanke explained why we needed QE3 when we didn't. They want somebody up there to pretend and to put the show on. But in effect, you're talking about needing nobody.
Why are these? I mean, the Republicans to me are as dumb as the Democrats. I mean,
that's a fact.
Why has no one
for that one from South Carolina, the first female graduate from the Citadel, who voted against McCarthy? McCarthy gave the best speech of any politician's career 2 days ago. Period. End about Israel. I mean, I went from hating the guy to loving the guy overnight. But she voted against him just because he broke his word and he wasn't accountable.
Good.
And she sits to his left.
So if you were to run, you would win. You'd win. I mean, because nobody wants, because both parties oversaw this, both the fiscal side and the Fed side, there's no one who stands ready to run on the most obvious thing that you could run on right now.
Look, there is, I spend a good bit of time in the state of Indiana.
If you run against the elites in a way that's not that way.
You ask anybody, man, how do you feel about paying people to not work? Man, that just get to that Biden. In the state of Indiana. Honestly, paying them twice what they were made, and they just dropped out of the workforce like flies. That damn Biden, those damn socialists, those damn people, those damn. And I'm like, and why did he sign the CARES Act into law? That damn Biden, I'm like, I'm sorry, who signed the CARES Act into law, sweetheart? I'm like, where's that woman from? They both did it.
Yeah.
Both sides.
Yeah. So you run it. I mean, if you take Neil Howe's framework, this is right on time, right into the fourth turning. And you have to have both parties of the same generation to the institutions themselves and the establishment and the elites have to all blow up together to have a fourth turning.
Well, they're all equally dysfunctional.
Yeah. So how does that, like, I mean, because most people, I'm sure, after they listen to you for 5 minutes, never mind 35 minutes, are going to be...
All the trading desks are like, martini!
Yeah, they're going to... You should drink right now if you're listening to this. And do you have kind of a stock answer for that? Like, oh, that's really fucked up. How does this end then, Danielle? And when? I mean, I wouldn't ever dare answer when, but how?
Again, my greatest fear right now, my greatest fear is that we get a blue wave on election day, that people who really are really, really, really angry that they go to file for bankruptcy and are told that you cannot expunge student loan debt in bankruptcy. You think they're mad now? I mean, I'm really worried that an entire generation who is serious about work from home, they're serious about needing a yogi when they are in the office. They're serious about, they're like, GM, power to the people, 32-hour work week. And I'm like, parlez-vous français? Because we're making the French look bad. I mean, seriously. So, but there's a generation who believes this bullshit that they tell themselves.
Yeah.
And they call it a work ethic. I'm like, you don't have enough air quotes for your work ethic. But they vote. Mm. And there's 82 million of them. So, I mean, my worst nightmare is that we do come together as we fall apart. And if they win and there's a blue wave, then all of a sudden this, oh my God, we're flirting with 10% CPI, becomes every day.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, why?
Because then you pay for everything in cash.
Why wouldn't Trump do the same thing?
He would.
Yeah.
In a heartbeat.
Yeah, so why does it have to be?
Do you remember how angry he was that he didn't get $2,000 for that second stimulus check? He wanted $2,000. We gave his second stimulus check was $600. He wanted $2,000, so he left a sticky note in the Oval Office, and he said, "Joe, go get the $1,400 balance," which Joe did 2 weeks later.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm really popular right now, aren't I?
Yeah. So both parties have to get into a debate about who's going to give out the most money. Who's going to let you live like you live in France?
In America.
Yeah.
Or as they would say, America. And I'm like, not the land of the free there, because we have to work. I mean, we have to work. Our politicians have to cross the aisle. I mean, this is such hokey cliche stuff, but if we don't come together as a country, we're going to tear ourselves apart. Mm-hmm. And if people really believe that it's on Uncle Sam to pay for everything, then they can just get used to double-digit inflation forever. Mm-hmm. But once again, in such an environment, you don't need a Fed.
So that's why you say, like, they have to special ops take out Powell, because he...
If he will stand in the line of this until he's his last day in office.
Right.
And Supreme Court precedent dictates, back to the 1870s, give or take, that if you try to fire the head of a full federal agency for cause, then until the Supreme Court rules, in theory, okay, it's an old law, 1873 or so. But in theory, the Federal Reserve Board members could say, we elect to mm-hmm. keep Powell in his position until the Supreme Court rules on the constitutionality of whoever is president trying to fire Powell. So until the Supreme Court rules, if they try and fire him for cause, or until his last day in office, I don't think we get CBDC. I do think that he holds higher for longer. I think QE's gone. I think the dot plot, the one thing about it that doesn't lie is that it ends with the number 2 in front of the Fed funds rate. We ain't going back to zero. I mean, I think that there are certain aspects of the world where Powell will hold the line, and if they take him out after they get back from Israel, then we're finished. Then we go straight to... Inflation won't be sticky, it'll just be off the rails.
That's disgusting. All right, if you guys have questions, because I have plenty, I could sit here for many hours with Danielle, as you can tell. Fire away, the questions are going to get voted up or down.
Voting on questions? That's so cool.
So this is like, yeah, they vote. So top question is kind of like what I keep asking about. Michael Chinisky, what makes you think the elites will allow JP to not do what they want, in parentheses, a rate cut, when they get to their pain threshold?
Hi, I'm Keith McCullough, and I wanted to introduce you to my favorite product at HedgeEye, The Macro Show. Why is it my favorite product? Well, it's my show. I do that every morning. If you want to get ready for the market day, you want to contextualize all the data, you want to make good decisions, then this is what you should be watching. It's a repeatable process that you can deliberately study, measuring and mapping time series to time series of data. So it's not going headline to headline and getting whipped around. It's actually being so much more dispassionate about it and making good decisions that are data-driven. So we'd love to have you on our team. Come join us.
Tune in weekdays at 9 a.m. Eastern and on demand anytime. Go to hedgeye.com/research to subscribe.
What about 11 redemptions in a row for BREIT is not painful? I mean, chief investment officers of public pensions are falling like flies. Mm. Right now, private credit, I mean, I don't know if you saw any of the coverage of the Milken conference, but there were a few public pension managers talking about the new frontier, where they do this weird thing called asset liability matching mm-hmm. for their pensioners. And they put 80% into high yielding risk-free government debt and 20% into 14-15% yielding private credit that has zero leverage, and tell private equity where they can go. The pain trade in private equity has been on for a long, long, long time.
Yep.
Since January of 2022, when Jay Powell turned on his voicemail, and they all started going into voicemail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have friends who've capitalized on that private credit. I mean, they're crushing it, and they have like unlimited demand
taking out private equity. Private equity has no exit.
Yeah.
In a higher for longer world, there's no exit. I mean, maybe. You know what? I just bought my youngest of 4 Birkenstocks. So, okay, there are certain exits. Okay, I get it. And they were kind of expensive, but that's why they're going public. But it's the exception, not the rule, and it's really hard if you're private equity now to not be taken out by private credit. And why wouldn't a public pension just take that to the bank all day long and put the other 80% in cash? Mm-hmm. They've been dreaming about this forever. They asked CalPERS 2 years ago to provide for the state of California what they were paying private equity fees. 18 months later, they were like, we can't figure it out.
This is crazy.
Sorry.
You know, it's an interesting one. Like, I don't know if you've read Gretchen Morgenson's The Plunderers. Mm-hmm. I mean, she really takes CalPERS to the woodshed. I mean, the hypocrisy. I mean, you know.
Yes, and they're not going to name a CIO for a long time. They just announced. But every single public pension plan in Canada and the United States follows CalPERS' lead.
Yeah.
That's the worst part, is they're the leader. They're the Pied Piper of pensions.
Yeah. Well, CalPERS I can mention because they're not a client. So here's another one. It's the same thing. Not the same thing, but it's about, it starts from Michael Bazile. If I were the Fed, I would have led with QT and slower hikes. Why wouldn't the Fed stop here and continue QT? Makes too much sense to me from the beginning.
I think that's the plan. That is, so for anybody who's never heard of the Logan Plan, Google it. So, and I advocate for the Logan Plan with a twist. So the Logan Plan says that even when the Fed starts to lower interest rates in 2024, they continue on with QT. My twist to that is, let's just say that the pain threshold in the Treasury market is such that they're like, please, no more QT. Well, when you start lowering interest rates, then your mortgage prepayment speed starts to pick up.
Mm-hmm.
So all of the assholes on my Twitter feed who are like, they need to sell MBS. You know what? They can start rolling those puppies right off once prepayment speeds pick back up. So take the baton from Treasury QT, hand it over to MBS, and say, by the way, we're never doing MBS QE ever again as long as we live. Probably not Treasury either, but we're going to stop the pain, let's call it end of 2024, with Treasury QT and hand that over to make up for lost time with MBS. Merry Christmas.
Having been on the inside, I know what the odds are of Austin Goolsbee, you know, telling the Fed what to do.
My wife was on my search committee. I don't see a conflict of interest.
Oh, he's a beauty. Well, Danielle, but is there anybody home? Like, is anybody at the Fed going to talk to Powell the way that you do about this and say, hey, look, this is pretty straightforward?
Well, he reads my work.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, like, as a practical matter, to get to the next move, you know, like,
Logan's already set it in motion.
Mm-hmm.
She ran the New York Markets Fed.
She's also one of the first ones to go dovish this week, like with the comments.
But she knows that dovish and stopping rate hikes has nothing to do with the balance sheet,
yeah.
And it has nothing to do with rate cuts.
Yeah.
That's what people don't realize. They're like, "That's it, November the 1st, party on!" And I'm like, "That's why I'm like, dust me off when there's a rate cut."
Yeah. Okay.
And what they did with the dot plot last time was remove, like amputate, two rate cuts from the dot plot.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why markets were like, oh, that's so rude. But they took two rate cuts out.
So you have Logan. Who else do you respect at the Fed that could actually move the ball the way that you
So I think, I think that Waller understands what's going on. I think Jefferson, new vice chair, leans dovish, but I think he's practical. And I think that somebody like Jefferson would know that QE and zero interest rate policy does indeed widen the inequality gap.
Yeah.
So I think he's dovish but rational.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's Daley, Goolsbee, Cook, the new one who wanted reparations. I mean, there's a camp of doves.
Yeah. But
the new guy in Kansas City, I can't think of his last name, but he just replaced Esther George. Mm-hmm. Rational guy. Loretta Mester.
Mm-hmm.
She's a good one. There are enough. And hopefully there are enough to, I mean, look, if he gets through 2024 or gets to October of 2024 before the first rate cut, he will have succeeded with higher for longer.
Yep.
He only has to go 5 more months from today, 5 more months to be higher for longer than Volcker ever was.
Good.
And including magnitude.
So there are enough people there, like as critical as you can be or anybody can be about the Fed, there are enough people there where you feel okay. Not that this is about feelings, but it is reading people and the ability for them to hold the line.
There are.
Yeah. Whereas, like, you know, like Austin Goolsbee is like an incompetent wet Kleenex. Like, this guy is like, and that's hard to be when you're a wet Kleenex, is you should know your place.
I'm like, wet Kleenexes can dissolve. Anyways.
But he's just not, like, it's just kind of like more of that, like what you said. If you, like, last question, because we're kind of running out of time here, maybe at least one of my last questions. You've alluded to Twitter trolls. What is the most pervasive thing that people come at you with that isn't salacious or whatever things about, you know, who you are? What is the most pervasive dogma that annoys you on
Twitter? There's a group of people out there who are like, well, why are they raising bank capital requirements? And I'm like, because the BTFP was never going to be free. It was always going to have strings attached.
What's the BTFP?
The program that was rolled out with Silicon Valley Bank that you can park your treasuries in MBS, get 100 cents on the dollar, even if they're worth 80.
Hmm. That's pretty good trade.
Right?
But that's for the elites. I didn't get that trade.
Where's the quid pro quo?
Exactly.
Higher bank capital requirements. Okay. Why do you think Jamie Dimon's losing his damn mind? Because there was never... And for people who don't understand liabilities on the Fed's balance sheet are not all alike.
Right.
And they're like, it's QE! And I'm like, God, you're a moron! So it's but I've muted most of them.
Yeah.
And because it's a $2 trillion facility, there's still a cohort of them. Mm-hmm. Every week it's like, it went up to $108.25 billion. And I'm like, it's a $2 trillion facility.
Mm-hmm.
And it never went all the way up. Mm-hmm. Because banks, the bank CEOs and their boards were like, you take this money, I'll kill you. Because mm-hmm. then we're going to have to raise capital requirements. We're not making that trade.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing's worth that. So it's the people who can be led to think that anything and everything that happens in Washington, D.C. is QE.
Yes.
And I'm like, no, it's not.
It's a great answer. And it's also aligned with kind of how X or Twitter works, which is you might have heard a headline or read a headline, somebody else heard somebody else's talking point, and then you throw it at the grandmaster here on Twitter, and she's like, get out of here. I mean, it's just, I think that's a big thing in today's kind of, everyone's got an opinion, but they don't have a background, they don't have any knowledge, they don't have a framework.
Look, and I mean, and there are people who are like, you've been calling for recession for, and I'm like, who knew that Kevin O'Leary and other people were going to, after the program had already petered out.
Yeah.
Hockey stick.
No, it's
nobody was expecting the $300 billion in 12 months. Nobody saw that coming.
Mm-hmm.
But it's real money that was really spent, and now LVMH stock is really down. It's just a reflection of money. Mm-hmm. It's just it. It's money.
Yeah, you're right.
And I mean, it's money in any form.
And we'll unfortunately have to end on that. But if you just look at the scorecard through the lens of luxury goods spending in terms of economic data, or you look at the XRT, which is an equal weight basket of everything that everyone bought.
Mm-hmm.
It's on the lows. You know, it's not, this doesn't look like the magnificently manipulated seven.
No,
it looks
a lot like late 2019 when the U.S. economy was headed into recession.
Yeah. Well done today. Very well done. I've seen you on the top of your game many, many times, but that's right up there. Thank you.
Thank you, Keith.
She's the one and only. Please be nice to her on Twitter. I'll be right back with Ben Hunt.
Don't forget to check out Hedgeye.com to get more actionable investing insights from our team of more than 40 research analysts. And check us out on Twitter at our handle, @Hedgeye. This presentation is informational only. None of the information contained herein constitutes an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any security or investment vehicle, nor does it constitute investment recommendation or legal, tax, accounting, or investment advice by Hedgeye or any of its employees, officers, agents, or guests. This information is presented without regard for individual investment preferences or risk parameters and is general, non-tailored, non-specific information. This content is based on information from sources believed to be reliable. Hedgeye is not responsible for errors, inaccuracies, or omissions of information. The opinions and conclusions contained in this report are those of the individual expressing those opinions and conclusions and are intended solely for the use of Hedgeye subscribers and the authorized recipients of the content. All investments entail a certain degree of risk, and financial instrument prices can fluctuate based on several factors, including those not considered in the preparation of the content. Consult your financial professional before investing. The information contained herein is protected by United States and foreign copyright laws and is intended solely for the use of its authorized recipient. Access must be provided directly by Hedgeye. Redistribution or republication is strictly prohibited. For more detail, please refer to the terms of service at hedgeye.com/terms of service.